Welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Alicia Seckham, and tackling your questions in studio this evening, Rowan Williams from Nitrogen Fund Managers and Drikus Combrink from Capicraft as well. Don't forget to send those questions through to us via SMS to 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us this evening. So we had a bit of a rocky start to the week and things are slowly, kind of abating globally, but the JSE now catching up, I guess, with the negative momentum that took hold yesterday. Your analysis of the trading day that was, Drikus?
I was a bit dumbfounded by the rally in the SA Inc. sector of the market yesterday. Obviously, it's part of a rally or a bit of a bounce from the lows that we've seen over the last 2 weeks. And that amidst of a lot of negative data, actually, apart from the fact that you've got some geopolitical risk escalating in the Middle East. The beginning of the week saw very poor economic figures out of China. Locally, the recent figures for the third quarter high frequency economic data has been very poor. So I'm not really sure on what the rally in the SA Inc. Shares is really based on, in the recent 2 weeks, except for maybe that they were oversold, you know, and they were just too cheap. And today, what we saw was a bit of profit taking from that bounce or maybe a bit of respite in that rally.
I guess illustrative of just how fickle the market is, Rowan, is the fact that we had financials leading the charge yesterday and today, hardest hit, pulling back 2.6%.
Yeah, so it does seem that there's something else at play. Bear in mind this week is futures closeout week, and then the index gets rebalanced again on Friday, so it's the quarterly closeout there. So I think that is creating some technical moves. We've also seen this month Prosus being unbundled out of Naspers, which is actually having quite a significant second round impact on the structure of certain indices. The capped SWIX versus the normal SWIX, and there's a lot of rebalancing. So there's a lot of technical derivative-driven activity that I think is also taking place, which is driving shares maybe a little bit away from fundamentals, and we probably like to see a little bit elevated volatility through the course of this week and settling down after the closeout.
And that explaining Sappi's move today, worst performer on the top 40 index, pulling back 7%. This, of course, as we've got Sappi dropping out of the JSE's top 40 index due to the Prosus listing and tracker funds forced to pull out.
More important is a lot of foreigners that track our markets, invest in the most investable basket, the most liquid one. That's the top 40 one. So if you drop out of it, there's a lot of foreign demand that wanes out of, away. And that in addition to that, there's also, a lot of active managers that also need to track that index. So if Sappi is not in there, they're not going to pay attention to it.
Yeah, absolutely. A few other plays also being highlighted. We've got Pick and Pay with a market cap of 31 billion on Monday falling out of the Industrial 25 index. We've got Tiger Brands with a market cap of 42.5 billion falling out of the Financial and Industrial 30 index as well. So quite a bit of maneuvering that's happening right now. How are you positioning yourself amidst it all, Rowan?
Yeah, so I guess savvy market players can have a look at this, can to some extent forecast it or anticipate it, I guess, and position accordingly. So what is apparent is a lot of it is in the price at that point in time. I guess the reason Sappi is falling out of various indices is because it was weak before that. At the cutoff point, the market cap has dropped significantly, but it does create self-fulfilling momentum. The share is moving down, it drops out of indices, there's four sellers, as Drikus was pointing out, and so it moves down further. So you can position, you've got to watch quite closely and really stay away from those companies that are potentially going to miss the cut. And then I guess it can create a buying opportunity further down the line. And sometimes, as I say, just before the actual event, a lot of it can already be in the price. So actually, on the liquidity that's created, can create a buying opportunity.
Okay, so that's a very broad assessment of where things are at the moment. I'm going to delve into a few questions that have come through. This one's going to test both mental and comprehension capabilities this evening. If a stock has a PE ratio of 5.55, a PB of 0.99, a PS of 0.15, and over the last 4 years, the stock's shown a profit margin of 2.5%, a debt-to-asset ratio of 16%, and a negative cash flow. Is this the opportunity to buy the stock or not?
Sounds like a SA small cap. That means absolutely nothing to me. Without the context of what the company does, without speaking to management, knowing the industry, doing due diligence on the qualitative factors of the company, that those figures mean absolutely nothing to me. Maybe to a quant fund, means nothing to me.
Yeah, because there are just so many variables at play at the moment that it just makes it hard, to distinguish what's going to influence a company like this moving forward.
Yeah, so I guess the analyst has taken a real company and just given us as Dricker's pointing out, the quantitative numbers. So in factor-driven funds, quant-type funds may look at those and not actually be that concerned about what the business does and what the prospects of the business are, and base it more sort of unemotionally on pure numbers. Maybe the one number that didn't sound that positive was the cash conversion. That sounded negative if I understood what you said correctly. So you'd need to understand that. I think what you can see is sometimes companies with what look like low PEs and good sort of low valuations, but they're actually not generating any cash. Those I would actually stay away from. So that's what I took from those numbers without knowing what the business does. I think you've got to look at that cash conversion.
Well, they've got balance sheet problems for
Yes.
So, but there's some red flags that is missing that you should, that's qualitative red flags
that
should explain those figures.
Exactly.
Yeah. Unless, if you've done your due diligence and there's no red flags and you still like the company, you think there's a future for this company, then with those assumptions, that sounds like a great buying opportunity. A lot
of
assumptions
in there. Hard to make a complete assessment without those X factors filled in. Let's take a look at another one. Do one of you clever people know what the process opening price is in order to calculate the CGT for people that received free process shares?
Yeah, so the CGT basically is the listing price on the day, the close of the day, I think.
That's what
it was about 1,200 Rand divided by the price of Naspers on the day before, and that is the ratio. I haven't calculated myself, so I'm just giving the formula here. And that's how unbundling normally works. And that ratio is basically the amount of stock that you sold, and it's got a base cost of zero, so you're going to pay capital gains, or that capital gains will be included in total, into your taxable income.
Okay.
Yeah, so my understanding is it's just the 1,200 Rand is the proceeds that you received, which is fully taxable.
That's about a third.
Yeah. So although they haven't, I haven't seen an official announcement what the price is. Yeah. You would assume, as Drick is pointing out, it's the closing price on day one, which is the normal standard. But normally the company does make an official announcement. I guess, obviously, it's still a long time, so we have to fill in our tax returns. So there's time.
Yeah.
But I guess using 1,200 Rand or thereabout is a reasonable estimate.
Okay. How are you feeling about Exxaro? I keep hearing of the demise of Exxaro. Please ask your panel if it's okay to hold in the medium term. Of course, Exxaro out with news today saying that it's looking to up its green credentials moving forward. It's looking to diversify during a time that's seeing this intense negativity towards coal-based electricity generation.
So the world wants to use less coal. We all get that. Maybe the rumors of its death, is a bit premature. We're not long Exxaro, just as a caveat. But it does seem to offer a bit of value here. But it might turn out to be a value trap. As they scale down on coal globally, demand for coal drops off. You might not see the earnings needle move over the medium to long term. So you're getting a good cash flow yield at the moment. I think the one thing that they do have going for them actually is, once again, it's short term, it's gone in their favor, is the iron ore assets, via Sishen iron ore. So that's a big part of the company these days, and iron ore has done well this year. And it's just one more reason why I don't own it, because I'm bearish on iron ore.
Yeah, I guess that's an important part to make, and look at how these companies are divesting, because this at a time where we've got global funds having announced that their collective $11 trillion under management will no longer fund investments that contribute to the to global warming. And as such, we've seen players like Anglo American South 32 having sold or selling down their South African coal mines.
Yeah, so I agree. I think you could see sort of significant negative demand for the shares. So in the form of continuous sellers, as it just becomes a non-ESG type of stock that you don't hold for environmental reasons. So that would be net negative. I think what I also saw some interesting commentary today coming out of Eskom, saying that they need to cut costs. They loathe to cut their employee bill. And so one of the areas that they're going to look at cutting costs is coal procurement. Mm. So even though they are continued users of coal, they're going to be very tough, I think, in negotiations, offtake agreements. And so that will create some headwinds as well. So, yes, I'd also be quite cautious.
And even for players like Seriti, which were, you know, thinking about listing, holding back on those listing opportunities, because whether, you know, those funding prospects will actually come to the fore is another question altogether amidst it all. If you've got some cash resources, the panel's view, please, keep or invest. It is, after all, a stock.
It's cash or stock. Well, you can have a lot of stock.
Off cash,
yeah. So, I think, you know, what cash gives you is confidence. We believe in flexible mandates where you can hold a bit of cash when there's not a lot of opportunities around. And so cash is confidence at the end of the day. You're less worried, you sleep better if the economy is approaching or is going to continue into this downturn that we're seeing at the moment. Then it's nice to have a bit of dry powder ready to buy at the lows. It doesn't always work out like that in practice. It's difficult to time these things, you know, and we don't really try to time them. But if you're uncertain about what to buy, just hold on to your cash. You have to have conviction before you employ cash. Now, with conviction, there's various levels of conviction that you work through. This is basically a model of how we think about capital allocation. Is we've got three levels of conviction. The first one is conceptually it makes sense, allocate a certain percentage. Secondly, if you've done a lot of due diligence, you've discovered the unknown unknowns, you can have a higher level of allocation. And then thirdly, when you think the timing is right, you have a third level of allocation. You know, when the stars align, as they say, you can have a higher level of allocation. And if you do that to each and every stock you have and you still have a cash residual, keep the cash residual till you identified an opportunity that you really have to invest in, like a piece of art that you can't walk by without looking at it.
Yeah, I'm sure consensus from your side, Rowan.
Yeah, look, it's important not to carry too much cash, though, because you are getting interest, but interest is taxable. And so really the real return, even though real interest rates are actually quite high in South Africa, so it is quite attractive to hold some cash deposits, in the long term is really negative after-tax return on cash, or maybe neutral right now. So isn't costing you that much to hold it. But really, if you need to save for the future, for retirement, you do need real returns and you need real growth. And you're really going to get that from assets that are growing. So I guess the challenge is to find is those stocks that are still going to have earnings growth and stock share price appreciation. So you would look for quality counters, I think, that are resilient, that are defensive, that notwithstanding difficult economic environment will continue to perform and I guess are well priced at the moment. Yeah. They're not too high. So it's not a bad time to be looking.
Let's hit pause on the conversation for now. It's time for a quick break. Keep sending through your questions via SMS to 41392 or email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za. We're back straight after this. Welcome back, and it's time to take a look at the markets now, taking a look at things stateside. As you can see there, we've had markets coming under a bit of pressure, but flat for the most part. Of course, this says a drop in oil prices today weighed on some of the energy counters on that end, while investors stand pat, I guess, ahead of the Federal Reserve's two-day policy meeting, where it's widely expected to cut interest rates tomorrow across the Atlantic. In the meantime, we've had the FTSE 100 holding steady as well. Push-pull factors simultaneously at play there. Oil heavyweights lifting the blue chip index, but then, you know, the impact on other major sectors of the attack on Saudi crude processing facilities fading somewhat. The CAC 40 backing the trend today, up 0.25%, the DAX flat. Still with me in studio, Rowan Williams from Nitrogen Fund Managers and Dricus Kombrink from Capicraft as well. Of course, lots of attention on the oil attack in Saudi Arabia over the weekend. We saw, the kind of immediate effect it had yesterday on that oil price, but oil managing to par some of that initial rise. Which JSE-listed company, other than Sasol, would likely benefit from the conflict between Iran and, take your pick, would gold benefit from a war in the Middle East?
I would say MTN, because I think Iran is already priced zero, priced valued at zero within the MTN stall. It's not cash flow negative anymore. Nigeria would be a main beneficiary. And I think that will bring down the risk of the Nigerian authorities milking MTN for more funds. Creative taxes, and I think that will be the major of the larger caps.
Okay. On your side,
obviously, Rowan? There's smaller energy players on the stock exchange, but I don't see that.
Yeah, there are not that many direct energy players other than Sasol, really. So I think you would go to those safe haven type stocks. I mean, we've seen gold shares already this year perform really well. And that's really, I guess, of the expected trajectory of U.S. interest rates and the U.S.-China trade talks, trade war, whatever you want to call it. So an actual war, I think, would drive gold demand significantly. And it would be a safe haven. We haven't actually seen sort of direct conflict globally for quite some time. So the market could move quite strongly. Interesting to monitor. I mean, what I have seen is, in fact, that the damage was not as was easily repairable. And that's what we're seeing in terms of the feedback.
And I guess that's a key when it comes to Sasol as well, because, it derived benefit for only so long and, would not necessarily continue to see that upside momentum after stabilization mechanisms are applied. And especially where there's so many question marks about where its balance sheet is at.
Sure.
Right now.
So I think that's what happened. I think a lot of holders of the stock took the opportunity, the small-ish bounce that we saw, to actually continue selling. Because as you point out, the long-term fundamentals, the issues around Lake Charles, nothing has changed there. The share has moved up. We haven't even seen the results. I think there were quite a few sellers out there.
And of course, Sasol's now twice delayed the release of its financial results due to a probe of that project in particular. Blue Label Telecoms joining the lot, I guess, facing suspension for failing to release its financial results today. Your view on Blue Label Telecoms entry price?
I'm not sure, but it all depends on what they do with Cell C. I'm not sure what's going to happen there. If there were more certainty around that deal, then obviously Blue Label wouldn't be trading around $3. It will be trading much higher. But it's all about debt. It's balance sheet and same story. So if they don't get a deal on Cell C, Cell C might fail. I think they would avoid that. But as far as I understand, that it is ring fenced, though, from Blue Label Telecoms. But a lot of value destruction. From that acquisition.
And it's been a continuous struggle for Cell C to actually make profits.
Yeah, so I guess Blue Label entering the investment was part of the potential recapitalization of the business. NetOne also became a shareholder. And really, I think what happened is at the same time that they made the investment, Telkom upped the competitive ante as well. They've become very aggressive on data pricing in particular in the more developed urban markets, urban areas. So I think that's also weighed heavily. It is a very competitive environment. There's been pressure on data prices generally from the regulators. So both MTN and Vodacom also more competitive. So a very difficult space. I also Cell C in its current guise without a significant recapitalization. Don't see it surviving. So it also need to understand what the business implications are for Blue as a customer of theirs. So it is quite complex. So I agree, we need to see much more clarity on the capital situation of Cell C before we make any sort of investment call.
Okay, how are you feeling about Glencore? What's your view on Glencore?
So I guess diversified miners generally are quite exposed to commodity cycles and Chinese demand as the marginal sort of consumer. We're not that bullish. We think we're seeing Chinese growth slow. And that is what's driven commodity prices. They've actually moved up quite high. As iron ore, they're not actually exposed to iron ore, but that's sort of driven the market and the excitement around the market. Also, Glencore's a stock that people either sort of like or don't like. A lot weighing over the stock in terms of the issues in Congo and the challenges by the US government. So I think there's a lot of uncertainties. I would be cautious. I think there may be other diversified miners that are just easier to understand and have a better sort of investment proposition.
In your book, Strickers, does it tick the like or don't like box?
No, I like it better than the other diversified miners because it doesn't have iron ore. Iron ore is the danger commodity at the moment, you know, from a supply side and demand
and
side.
And you alluded to that at the top.
Copper, longer term, there will be demand, but there's also a lot of supply of copper. But I do think where Glencore offers an opportunity, as the stock has been depressed over its issues in Congo with the with U.S. Case coming to the fore in the next few weeks, I think. Mm. Then we'll have more certainty around that. But if that there is a positive turnout, then it will be too late to own it. At the moment, on a fairly depressed copper price, they're chugging out about a 12% cash flow yield, free cash flow yield. So they're highly cash generative. Some of that might have to go towards paying down some bills now, you know, if a decision goes against them. But I do think that this offers an opportunity where the other diversified miners are, you know, trading on the back of an extremely high iron ore price.
Okay, from resources, let's shift focus to the financial arena. What's your take on an investment in Alexander Forbes on a long-term basis, Rowan?
Yeah, so it's been quite an interesting investment case. I guess they are involved in the markets themselves. We have seen management changes. It does look like the new management team are focused on simplifying the business. They've been selling assets, sold the insurance brokerage assets. And going back to the core. So it is somewhat reliant on an improving economic environment in South Africa. We have to see improvement in employment. Mm-hmm. That's partly what drives the underlying business fundamentals. But it does look much more reasonably priced. So if you feel more confident about the prospects of the South African economy, maybe not 1 year out, 2-3 years out, and the management's ability to restructure the business and focus on the core and improve the prospects, I think it is actually looking quite interesting at these levels.
How much of that can you extrapolate to a stock like ShopRite? What's your view on ShopRite in the next year? Is this now a buying opportunity?
Two main differences. You know, the similarities is obviously that they're SA Inc.
Yeah.
You know, they're dependent on the SA consumer. SA consumer needs to grow their pension assets for Alexander Forbes to benefit. And ShopRite needs the SA consumer to grow its wallet, you know, and pay more for food. The two drivers that might benefit ShopRite that will be actually or might be negative for Alexander Forbes or for financials in general is a return of inflation, particularly food inflation, which will and then ShopRite is the ideal hedge against that, and I do expect food inflation to increase over the next year. Globally, there's an increase in food inflation with a lot of events globally that's hampered food supply. And then secondly, ShopRite's problem in the short term is margin. For most companies in SA that has plant and property on the ground, you know, we've seen administrative costs soar and the labor component for the lower LSM type worker has been more than your higher paid worker. So inflation in the lower category labor is higher than the higher. So PPI is at 6.5%, CPI has been 4.5%, and you've seen margin pressure for the retailers. And I see that continuing over the short to medium term, but over the longer term, I think it will be a great inflation edge.
Do you see any buying opportunity in ShopRite now, Rowan?
Well, we're quite concerned about just some elements of the balance sheet. They have still significant exposure to Angola. and Nigeria. So, and they've got certain bonds that they've actually taken away, not able to repatriate cash from Angola because of currency controls. They took a US denominated, US dollar denominated bond, but it's still backed by the government, and the interest is rolling up. So it's just not entirely clear that that cash will be repaid. So the balance sheet looks more stretched than it should be. Again, we would think there's better opportunities elsewhere with quality retailers that don't have the same issues.
Okay, so we've used specific stocks here related to the South African economy. More broad-based, how does Joe Soap assess a buy for a SA Inc. stock?
So, well, I guess you can, two things, there's sort of the macro and the micro. The macro, what we're talking about is the overall economic environment. So you need to consider that. Are we seeing an improving South African economic environment? Are we going to see better growth, mm-hmm. GDP growth next year than this year? The medium-term budget policy framework statement in October maybe give us a better clarity on the state of government finances. What's the trajectory of interest rates? Are we going to get a cut this week, which I think would help the economy as well? And even though you may not be that positive on the South African environment, the macro environment, maybe there's secular growth in a particular industry. So maybe the IT sector is still growing, the services sector in IT, and maybe there are opportunities there. So there are some interesting stocks that I think that you can look at that have good sort of individual fundamentals and that will actually perform notwithstanding quite difficult macro environment. And that's a thing I think that you need to look at and try to find a nice medium cap stock that will benefit, will see secular earnings growth, and hence share price appreciation.
So on the theme of stock picking then, Drikus, what's your stock pick this evening?
Grindrod Shipping. Spun out of Grindrod about a year and a half ago. It's plummeted from the listing price of about 1,300, 130, 140, sorry, to about 80 bucks recently, 70 bucks recently. And, you know, a lot of it has to do with it's spun off and a lot of, you know, investors in Grindrod initially doesn't want to hold Grindrod Shipping. It's a much more volatile one, cyclical one of the underlying companies that they had. And a lot of people said, well, we liked Grindrod, but we didn't like Grindrod Shipping. So they got rid of it. It's now trading at about a 60% or 40% discount. Actually, it's trading at 60% of NAV. And that NAV is tangible NAV. It's ships that you can sell. In you know, get hard currency for that in dollars, and even then the tangible NAV has been written down tremendously over the last few years. They've got one of the more modern shipping fleets out there. They're consistently getting 20% more than normal shipping rates, and shipping rates are starting to move after a lot of years of undersupply in the shipping markets. In 2008, the world produced 800 ships. Last year it was 100 ships. I don't think we're producing any ships at the moment, because they're all getting ready for IMO 2020. IMO 2020 is the new emissions regulation that's that the whole shipping industry globally has signed, and they're all fitting scrubbers for the older ships, and that is caused backlogs at the shipping at shipping yards. And we're seeing Baltic Dry Index, the tanker index, cargo index shooting the lights out at the moment from very depressed levels. But if they keep at these levels, then these guys are going to return to profitability.
Okay. Rowan, your stock pick this evening?
I'm going with RMI. So that's a portfolio of insurance assets. So Discovery, it's been somewhat depressed, so you're getting in at a better level. MTN has also been somewhat depressed, Metropolitan. Hastings, it's a UK insurer and OUTsurance, which... they recently came with results, a little bit depressed, but we are seeing sort of value at these levels. It is a portfolio, so it is a play, I guess, to a large extent on South Africa, but it looks like it's offering value here, and I think you're getting it at a decent entry price.
So that's what's on the radar screen. Let's leave it there, gentlemen. Thanks so much for having joined me in studio this evening. Of course, Rowan Williams is with Nitrogen Fund Managers, and Drikus Kombrink is from Capicraft. We take more of your stock-related questions tomorrow. Have a good evening. Dricus, what's your stock pick this evening?
Grindrod Shipping. Spun out of Grindrod about a year and a half ago. It's plummeted from the listing price of about 1,300, 130, 140, sorry, to about 80 bucks recently, 70 bucks recently. And, you know, a lot of it has to do with it's spun off and a lot of, you know, investors in Grindrod initially doesn't want to hold Grindrod Shipping. It's a much more volatile one, cyclical one of the underlying companies that they had. And a lot of people said, well, we like Grindrod, but we didn't like Grindrod Shipping. So they got rid of it. It's now trading at about a 60% or 40% discount. Actually, it's trading at 60% of NAV. And that NAV is tangible NAV. It's ships that you can sell. In you know, get hard currency for that in dollars, and even then the tangible NAV has been written down tremendously over the last few years. They've got one of the more modern shipping fleets out there. They're consistently getting 20% more than normal shipping rates, and shipping rates are starting to move after a lot of years of undersupply in the shipping markets. In 2008, the world produced 800 ships. Last year it was 100 ships. I don't think we're producing any ships at the moment, because they're all getting ready for IMO 2020. IMO 2020 is the new emissions regulation that's that the whole shipping industry globally has signed, and they're all fitting scrubbers for the older ships, and that is caused backlogs at the shipping at shipping yards. And we're seeing Baltic Dry Index, the tanker index, cargo index shooting the lights out at the moment from very depressed levels. But if they keep at these levels, then these guys are going to return to profitability.
Okay. Rowan, your stock pick this evening?
I'm going with RMI. So that's a portfolio of insurance assets. So Discovery, it's been somewhat depressed, so you're getting in at a better level. MTN has also been somewhat depressed, Metropolitan. Hastings, it's a UK insurer and OUTsurance, which... they recently came with results, a little bit depressed, but we are seeing sort of value at these levels. It is a portfolio, so it is a play, I guess, to a large extent on South Africa, but it looks like it's offering value here, and I think you're getting it at a decent entry price.
So that's what's on the radar screen. Let's leave it there, gentlemen. Thanks so much for having joined me in studio this evening. Of course, Rowan Williams is with Nitrogen Fund Managers, and Dricus Kombrink is from Capicraft. We take more of your stock-related questions tomorrow. Have a good evening.